Coming up on this episode of the Mario Rosenstock podcast.
I always notice that when I come up to Dublin or anywhere doing gigs, in my head, the whole way up in the car, I'm like, don't be a gom now. The minute you start off the gig, say, don't send them about Cork. You don't have to. And I'm on the way up in my head. I'm like, you don't do it. You're a cosmopolitan woman who's coming up to do her badass stand-up in Dublin. And no sooner do I get in front of the microphone than I go, I'm from Cork. I'm just like, for fuck's sake, what is wrong with me?
Well, of course, when you've got two very Corkonians on the podcast, a discussion about Cork and Corkishness and all things Cork is certainly going to come up at some stage. But the uniqueness of Cork, which I'm fascinated by in my spare time, was one of the things that Laura O'Mahony, Rob Heffernan and I discussed and talked about in this episode of the Mario Rosenstock podcast. Laura is a comedian and actress best known for her sketches on CCC Cahoots, The Trio, Comedy Troupe, The School on RTE and Bridget and Eamon. She's also a very successful stand-up comedian in her own right. Rob is one of Ireland's most successful Olympians ever, competing in five different Olympic Games and winning a gold medal at the World Championship. Together, Rob and Laura present the Red Raw podcast. They talk very openly about their lives and share stories about body image, trying to conceive, Rob not hitting puberty until he was 17 years of age, and Laura being a virgin into her mid-20s. Nothing is off the table when it comes to their podcast, and nothing was off the table when it came to our chat too.
You've come into my DMs basically to say you've looked at my pictures, you think I'm a mess, and you're going to help me. And they get so offended then when I'm like, no, I'm grand, I'm happy out how I am. I do a podcast with an Olympian. If I need any help on my regime, I'll ask him.
Hi, I'm one of you. Yeah. Just want to slip you a quick message here that has nothing to do with making me money.
Nothing at all. But hey, look at this new sponge that you need for your self-care. Ridiculous.
Yeah. Have you ever thought that you're dirty?
Yeah.
You're inside and out. Dirty.
Yeah.
Well, guys, I'm here. You know?
I can remember looking at this Italian guy the day before going, fuck, definitely beat him anyway, look at the state of him. And he ended up lapping me twice. Do you know what I mean? And
look at the state of him.
But that was my thought process, yeah. Like, you know, I'd probably having a skinhead and an earring and, you know, acting tough, but underneath you weren't, like.
Have you ever appeared on Brendan's show?
I have.
Yeah?
I have.
Did you talk about mental health? Well, you are now. Do we? COVID? Do you have COVID? I'm afraid of COVID. I'm scared of COVID. It's gone long ago, but I'm still on. Let's talk about COVID.
This conversation is a lot of fun, and it's all coming up in a couple of minutes' time. Now, as two well-known podcasters leave 2FM, among a drove of other presenters, some of their fellow podcasters are auditioning for the gig on 2FM. Check this out.
Hi, folks. That was Ariana Grande, and this is Blind By Boat Club on 2FM. Great response to my call out there, which was, have you ever licked hallucinogenics off the back of a 100-year-old Galapagos turtle for your mental health? Text or WhatsApp now. This is Noah Kahan and season of the Sticks.
Yes, good evening and welcome to 2FM Drive Time with me, Eamon Dunphy and John Giles. The two Johnnies are gone, now it's Eamon and one Johnny. Isn't that right, Johnny lad?
That's right, Eamon lad.
Did you ever play County John lad?
I'll tell you in the podcast, Eamon lad. When
very good, very good, very good, John lad. Here's Pitbull, lad.
How are you? It's Dave McWilliams here, coming at you on 2FM Drive Time. Oh, just looking at the Electric Picnic lineup and the economic implications of the Electric Picnic. What are they? I'm looking at the lineup here. Teddy Swims, great artist, reminded me of that old economic analogy, that little chestnut, where it's only when the tide goes out that you really, really know, John. Isn't that right?
Yeah.
Who's wearing their underpants. And the Wolf Tones, John,
yeah,
on the main stage. Brings back all the memories. Mm. Ah, it's a chisler.
Oh, no.
On the main streets, a bleeding donkey. And myself and the lads gathered round the campfire.
Wow.
And we're singing raw songs to beat the band. Sean Suit, the whole works, getting absolutely pulped we are on Linden Village and in the odd reefer to get us going before plopping up the donkey up the Vico Road there and kicking the living bollocks off the prods. Ah, we fucked.
Exclusive comedy on the Mario Rosenstock podcast as usual. And of course, if you want to catch me live on stage, I'm in the Three Arena, my biggest show ever, coming next year, Friday, March 28th, 2025, celebrating 25 years of Gift Grub on the radio. Tickets are flying out the door. I'm delighted with how it's going, but please get in there, get your tickets and come and see me. Okay, now to the conversation between Laura O'Mahony, Rob Heffernan and myself. Very different backgrounds, the two of them. She's from the world of entertainment and he's from the world of sport. So how do they end up making a podcast together in the first place? That's where we started.
So I suppose Rob and I were kind of thrown together on Breakfast Radio in Cork. I remember, like, obviously I know about Rob. He's an Olympic athlete. I used to follow his career. But it was suddenly we were going to be on the radio together. And I remember meeting him outside the door just going to be like, what is this fella going to be like now? Fully convinced he's going to want me to go into the gym. He's going to want me to be doing walking. We're going to have nothing in common. It's going to be horrendous. So I remember meeting him outside the door. Quick kind of, oh, girl, how are you? A bit of a cuddle. All fine. And then we were thrown into the deep end. Then we're in Breakfast Radio. I had been on already with Ray Foley, but he was gone. So it was this new team. It was me, Rob, and this other girl, Kira. And it was like kind of getting to know somebody. Like we'd only barely gotten to know each other. And then suddenly you're on air and you're kind of getting to know him on air as well. But I suppose the real Rob that I got to know was the one off air. And that was the one that I wanted to do the podcast with. I was like, aha, this.
And what was that Rob?
That Rob is the real Rob.
And what is that Rob?
That real Rob, I suppose it's, we'd be, even though we're very different in terms of backgrounds, we'd have very similar thoughts and things in terms of, like, you know, being resilient, just get up and do it. And don't be a big dope and don't be bedding down into stupid stuff and you know, like, let's all just get stuck into life and not be so worried about being careful or, like, you know, I suppose from radio there's so much content driven stuff, and even being online it's all like, you know, I've done a clever sketch, and it was just to kind of come away from some of that and the real chats we used to have off mic, all the stuff that you can't say on air, all the swearing, all of the talking about drinking and crap and messing. It was like, that's what we want to go on and do a podcast about. No, obviously we just stayed on the radio, except some of us got ceremoniously booted off of it.
It tends to happen though to a lot of people.
Well, it's very cutthroat, and look, we totally get it. Yeah. Like Rob, it was stated clearly Rob was let go and I left as a result, because I was like, I just don't think that's correct. So I don't like people coming in and firing my friends, so I left then. And then we were like, what are we going to do? And the next natural step was to do a podcast. Sure, everybody has a podcast, but I was like, I know this can be good because it's just, we want to be normal, want to be our normal selves, not the kind of like, hey guys, how's it going? Ed Sheeran's up next. I don't want to be that. Do you know what I mean? Like, that's a hard thing to be, and you have to be that when you're on Breakfast Radio.
There are very few people who go around in the world, right, walking into shops and go, hey guys, what's happening? Ed Sheeran's next.
Yeah.
I have a Mars bar and a packet of milk.
Yeah.
And Dermot Kennedy's next.
Yeah.
It doesn't really happen that often. So is Laura right, Rob, about...
Yeah. Obviously, coming into radio, from my world, was very overwhelming.
Yeah. You know, explain to our audience what your world
so
is.
So, I did athletics. I went to 5 Olympics. I won an Olympic medal, World Championships, European medal. And I've done other stuff afterwards. Like, I do stuff on RT and television, which is fine because you're being asked questions, and that's easy. You're asked about stuff that you know about. The only thing that was I could relate it to was when I did Dancing with the Stars, when I was completely out of my depth at the start and I adapted. But with radio, I always remember at the start, I was like, you're after biting off more than you can chew over. You can't put up an act every single day. You're going to be found out. This is it. It's over. And we got into it.
We did.
And I think we used to have better crack. Like, so we used to have to go out the back room to answer the calls for the callers, and we used to fucking have a laugh.
Yeah.
Like, the two of us used to have a laugh. Like, yeah. Not putting on impressions as good as you know, but just chatting to the callers as a different person and going back in and chatting to them live in air. And then we used to meet up before work, and it was the crack we had off air. And I think our show, actually, like, our listenership grew. It was the highest listenership on the station in over 5 years. Yeah. So it was getting better. Yeah. So I was confused when it was cut from us then. Yeah. And there wasn't a natural end. Do you know what I mean? Yeah. So we said, no, we can't.
But radio duets and even radio hosts get moved for a variety of reasons. It isn't even always numbers. Some of it is change of management, political, all that sort of stuff. One person's vision is not another person's vision.
I completely understand.
And people come into management and they have to almost show that they're willing to make a move by changing something.
Yeah. Totally. And I think we were the newest show there.
You were going out on maternity leave, so it was your fault.
It was nothing to do with my baby.
It was easy to break it up. You were going away anyway.
This is what he says. It was nothing to do with my...
It was all to do with you being pregnant.
I didn't take any maternity leave. I left before my maternity leave.
See, this is it. They're off already now. To summarise it then, you were thrust into this atmosphere which was by its nature competitive, ruthless and indeed adrenalised.
Yeah.
And so you were both partners and soldiers in this little thing that you did together, and then that thing ended. But you found that what came out of that was a kind of a liking for each other, a liking for the way each other got a thought and spoke.
Yeah.
And then you went, well, maybe let's take this to another level. Let's take this to another platform.
Well, I suppose, like, when I looked at, like, Laura's world and my world, I'd massive respect on the way she could deliver stuff. I actually love people, like, when they can be on and professional, and then when they're off, they're normal. And that is not an act all the time. And I seen Laura on stage in The Everyman, and I remember watching her going, fuck it, I'm way out of my depth with this girl. She's unbelievable. Like, but looked at it as an opportunity for me to learn off of someone as well. And she was very good. Like, you were very good to me on the radio. And I grew into it and I did love it. Mm. But we had very similar, like, I would come in, like, I'm coaching lads. I'm coaching lads now who could win the Olympics. And I would come in with stories about my athletes and she'd be very cutting about stuff. Mm. And it would take me aback. Like, no waffle, no fluff. And I'd think, fuck, she's right. Mm. Like, you're very clinical in the way she thinks. So we had a lot of similarities. And I suppose the likes of E getting up in stage is no different to athletes going out on the big stage.
Yeah.
Can you deal with that pressure and can you perform under that pressure?
It's performance.
So there's so many similarities, because I know loads of guys in sport and they're not able to perform.
No, it's performance. It's that idea of, I often look at it in terms of athletics, actually. And you watch somebody run 100 metres or a 400 metres and you go, what if they're not up to it today?
Exactly.
What if they're not feeling it?
But today is the day.
But today
you have
is
to
the
be
day.
Up for it.
Rashida Adeleke has to be feeling it.
Exactly.
You know, just to use that.
Yeah, and that's a brilliant thing. And they don't. They always have cop-outs, and a lot of athletes have cop-outs. And she didn't. And I love that kind of, that rootless mentality as well. It's like, no, like, we have a live show on The Everyman on the 14th. That is the day.
Yeah.
That's the day. Yeah. There's no, like, going
on. And that's so exciting for you guys.
Yeah.
So you started a podcast and it's called The Red Raw Podcast.
Yeah.
Now, that's an interesting, Red Raw, something that, you'd be careful about Googling now.
Yeah. And, it's just a small bit of ire.
But if I was saying Red Raw Podcast and knowing most about you, right, I would say the red is Cork.
Yeah.
And the raw is meaning unfiltered and
correct.
And stuff. Isn't that what it means?
Yeah. And I think, do you know what, Mario? I think, like, when the radio ended, we had to go through a period of time of being absolutely gutted. We're nearly a year on from that now. And people are like, he's still going on about it. We're not still going on about it. When we look back now, that was absolutely right for us that it did end, because, like, I don't know how, I think we would have stuck at it, but I don't know, was that actually correct for us as people to kind of stay going in, getting up at the crack of dawn, going in and doing the breakfast show? We were very vulnerable, very needy, very like, are we doing good? And, like, I'm not used to being in that position. I'm used to being in charge of my own ship.
Yes.
I'm a comedian. Mm. I used to obviously be in cahoots with Ty Kickey and Dominic McHale. We used to have a sketch group together.
That's right.
We were the helm of our own ship. We were 100% certain, I know I'm going in here now and I'm doing good. Mm. This is a good sketch. We're funny. I write my stand-up. I know I'm funny. Being in that kind of vulnerable position in the radio where I was like, am I good? Am I second-guessing myself?
Yeah.
You know, constantly, like, are the numbers good?
Yeah.
They've gone down. Oh, they're doing better than us. You know, being pitted against other things. actually, we kind of realise that that kind of mentality probably doesn't suit us.
No. Mm.
We're much better off when we're in charge of our own ship and also free to just be ourselves.
Mm.
Because that's all we've got. Like, there'd be days sometimes you'd look back at like little bits you had to do for the radio and you'd be gawking over yourself. You'd be like, who's that doll?
I know.
Like, does and she also, really care about being, the new flavour of crisps?
I know, but
she
being
doesn't.
Yourself is all you've really got at the end of the day, no
for
matter
anyone,
where you are,
for
right?
For anyone,
and so what kind of stuff do you talk about? And
Like for me with Rob, when like Rob isn't an Olympian now to me in my head anymore. Like Rob is a dad of young kids and I'm a mom of young kids. And it's like for everyone to realise that we are all in that same mental headspace of like, I want my kids to be okay. I want them to be well balanced, but I also want them to be talented. Mm. But I also want them to be secure and sociable, but also embrace all their weirdnesses and their oddities. You know, like we've ended up going down talking about those kind of things and just the daily panics. We've spoken a lot about like health anxiety and like we're definitely not a mental health podcast because...
What if I said macho men and sparkly guys?
Macho
What's
men,
that?
That's okay. So that is my thing is that like, you know, Rob, I would consider that Rob comes across quite macho, but he's actually sparkly behind it all.
What is sparkly?
So my husband is sparkly, so he's
not gay.
Just want to say that he's definitely not gay, lads. We have a ball. No, but he's not gay, but he is, you know, loving, open, bait into
he's
Taylor
in, he's
Swift.
A, he's in touch with his emotional side.
Totally.
And maybe even his feminine side.
Maybe his feminine side, like, you know, he loves watching.
I am too.
Yeah. And, and to be able to be that publicly, Mario, and to kind of not have to be that, all right, girl, what's the story? Like, you don't have to be that anymore just to be able to be, like, that's what I want for, I've two sons.
I started
sons.
Doing that years ago, you know, when I started doing that years ago. Even Ed would have heard me saying this, I think, when I would have started, people asked me about music, right?
Yeah.
And I was adamant about this, right? That I was 100% adamant that ABBA were one of the best bands and some of the best music I've ever heard in my life.
Yes.
And you'd get some really fierce looks now saying that, but I stuck to my guns.
You're dead
and
right.
Subsequently, a lot of those people have turned coat now and they're like, yeah, ABBA's great. Yeah. Like, I love ABBA. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Like, it's the hooks, it's the melodies. Like,
unbelievable. Unbelievable. Their longevity,
like,
you know,
like Bjorn, like, it's fucking amazing. Like, I need it.
He makes
it
stunning.
No, but it's the melding of the two female voices there. Like, it's the harmonies there, obviously.
Yeah,
like,
obviously.
You know what,
but it's so true. Like, as in, the like, I want my sons to be sparkly boys, okay? Yeah. They can also play GAA. Yeah. They can do whatever they want, but just...
Well-rounded.
Well-rounded.
Emotionally.
Emotionally well-rounded. And I want them to be, like, great boys to their partners in the future. And, and like, so I think some of our chat is basically what we would have been chatting about off-air because, obviously, like, our life was going on while we were on air doing the breakfast show and you'd be stressed about various things and we'd be chatting about that off-air. And it's just
living,
bringing,
isn't
it's
it?
It's just living. Yeah.
Living through the prism, through the lens of you, your two personalities and your two personalities bouncing off each other.
Yeah.
Yeah, and the similarities there. And I think the similarities for everybody in life, you know, like that, you know, we're not necessarily, you know, we have a mental health issue after going out and having 7 or 8 points. You're just fucking tired and you're hungover. You'll be grand in 3 days.
One of my biggest laughs, one of the biggest laughs I get in the last show I did in the opening 5 minutes was I was doing a routine about, I was trying to split up all the characters I do. And obviously I was down in Cork and I was going, I lost count of the amount of Cork characters I do. Because it's not just like I do the odd Cork character. I actually had them filed and everything. So I had about 18 different Cork characters. And in fact, I had them catalogued according to the different schools that the Cork characters went to, Spirit-Nave and Cloche the Crease 3 and all this sort of stuff. And then I would do impressions of them based on the fact that I would imagine what they were like in school.
Mm-hmm.
And then, and one of the best laughs was when I saw Rob Heffernan. And then I start doing you as an 8-year-old discovering walking for the first time. And the teacher's trying to follow you around the class and you're out sprinting him walking. And I'm walking around the stage. And so they all get it, this whole thing. So Rob, I mean, you came into our consciousness with this 50-kilometre walks business. And you won a bronze in London in 2012. That was the British, the GB Olympics.
Yeah.
And then you won the gold then in the gold, world gold.
In Moscow,
I remember when I was 13 watching Eamon Coughlin winning world gold in Helsinki.
To the day. It was 30 years to the day.
Was
in
it?
Moscow was when.
In Moscow. Mm. Mm. Yeah. Wow.
So
you're a world champion.
World champion,
Olympic bronze medalist.
Yeah.
And your background was, I suppose, solidly working class?
Yeah, yeah. So I'd have grown up, like, my dad's a plasterer, my brother's a plasterer, my uncle's a plasterer. So I left school after third year to do an apprenticeship and ended up going back and I ran in a cross-country race up in the north side of Cork, and one of the brothers said to me, he said, you're scholarship material. But I was always sports mad. Like, I played football with Nemo until I was minor. I was always a very good runner. I did, took up race walking in secondary school, but sport would have been my life. I did Taekwondo for 4 years. I then just took a growth spurt to 17 and started getting really good at athletics, and ended up getting a running scholarship to America and qualifying for the European Championships as a junior athlete. So sport shaped my life, you know, whereas if it wasn't, I'd be working in building sites now.
Yeah, just two things there. Is this correct? Because according to the notes I was reading, you had a very late puberty, is that right?
Yeah,
so
yeah.
That's 17, right?
Nearly 17, yeah.
Sorry, this is a podcast. It's not the radio. So let's talk about that, if you don't mind. We're all in touch with our feminine side.
Absolutely. Yeah. I've no bother at all.
We've spoken about this at length.
Tell us about it.
And you know what? I was only speaking to my nephew. I was up at a gymnastics there in Dublin at the weekend, and my brother's young, he's 12, and he's about, I say, he's 4'6". And I said, I was 4'7" going into first year, and I'm 5'8" now, just, you know. And I said, you just need to stick it out now. And I says, you will grow and you will get stronger, but don't let other fellas, like, don't let them put you down now, or don't feel inferior to him. He's tiny. I'm looking at him and I'm going, oh, he's so small.
Yeah.
And I was like, was it actually that small?
You were teeny.
But I always thought I was huge, you know, in my head. And I had a winning races, so I had massive notoriety from being, like, even a good runner. But it was probably me winning the races in school, but I was tiny, Mario.
Okay, sorry,
so then when I hit puberty and started getting physically stronger, sure, I...
You had all the skills already, yeah, and now the body was delivering.
And then I had such an appreciation of always kind of being down the pecking order in the bigger competitions and knowing after getting this new physique,
so
new
in other
strength.
Words, you almost overcompensated for your smallness by developing your skills to such
an
extent, and then your body delivered for you.
Yeah.
The moment you discover that you're a walker rather than a runner.
Yeah.
What's that?
I'd have done all sports in Crease 3, and I'd have done race walking then in secondary school for the school's championships. I'd then, by default, I think with any sport, when you're good at all sports, your sport nearly picks you. So I would have qualified for the Tailteann Games as a 16-year-old, and I got disqualified at them. And the next year went up and I finished second in the All-Irelands under 17. It was my first national medal. And then it just opens up a new world, new company to you. And then the next thing, you're invited to go on trips to England and you're racing in the Isle of Man. I raced the British Junior Championships in Birmingham and I won them. And then the next thing, like 3 years previous, I'm a hairless little boy hanging around the park in Ballyvian, and now I'm winning British Junior Championships as a walker. And it came to a conundrum then as an 18, 19 year old, because I was still running with the club and the school. I'd have been a very good runner, and I got offered a scholarship to America. I was like, and I qualified for the European Juniors as an under 19, went to the European Juniors in Ljubljana, and I finished second last. But when I was out there, I was like, fuck, it's a bigger world. It's a hard thing to say, you know, there's a bigger world in Cork and Ireland. And it just intrigued me, like, just looking at all of the other athletes, how professional they were, how strong they were. I was lapped twice by an Italian guy who won it. And when we go back to sparkly men and macho men, I can remember looking at this Italian guy the day before going, fuck, definitely beat him anyway, look at the state of him. And he ended up lapping me twice. Do you know what I mean? And
look at the state of him.
But that was my thought process. Yeah. Like, you know, I'd probably having a skinhead and an earring and, you know, acting tough, but underneath you weren't. Like, but this guy was just prepared. He was very strong, and it just, I had to kind of learn, whether it was the radio or sport, I had to learn in environments, and it was like, oh, all right, I can get better at this. And came home and declined to go on the scholarship. I didn't go on the running scholarship. And I said, I'm going to go to college, did a sports injuries diploma, and I ended up going to Sydney. And sure, it was like Pandora's box. It just kept on opening up, you know.
Right.
So, yeah, that's how it happened.
And then, after your career?
After my career, then, I went through all the different stages of the career, which I could chat about for hours.
Is there a big come down?
Because I had so many of them, Mario, during my career. So I went to Sydney, then the next year I went to World Champions. So I 24th, I finished 14th the next year in the Worlds, just to miss the medal then in 2002, broke every single Irish record, doing really well. And then I 2003, 2004, 2005, 2006, I was either disqualified or injured, back working on a building site with my brother, had no money, was poor, living with Marion. We used to have to bring the rubbish to our mum's house on a Wednesday because we were so broke. And then Robert Korzenowski, who won all of the Olympics when I was competing, he was 4 times Olympics champion, he was coaching me. And I got a second chance of life. I had a double hernia, got that fixed, and I was like, okay. I then had all its success afterwards, but I was more mature.
Yeah.
You know?
And Laura, you first came to my attention because of the CCC Cahoots sketches with Ty Kickey and Dominic.
Yeah.
And we used to pass them around up here, you know? And Ian was the first one to pass them on to me. And they were really funny, you know, and really good. And we liked your, the troupe, the sketch comedy troupe that you were.
Yeah.
And then Tyke has gone on to, you know, Tyke has established himself in all sorts of ways, you know, and he's particularly vocal about the whole Palestinian Gaza thing at the moment, and he's been on this podcast a few times talking about that, and he's bet into that.
He is he always was, like, as in, that's what I think is lovely about Tyke, is that, like, this isn't a new, he's not jumping on any sort of bandwagon. This has been a story. Tyke has always been an advocate for Palestine, basically, you know, and his political interests were probably maybe what ended Cahoots, because we weren't super political, but I'm glad that he's gone on to kind of, like, fully use his comedy for what he wanted to use it
for.
Do you know?
And Dominic is an actor.
Dom is an actor, but he also is, like, working in a pharmacy.
He's not a pharmacist.
Was he in The Young Offenders?
He was in The Young Offenders. Yeah. He's Sergeant Healy. He is. And we still act together every Christmas. We do the improv panto in the Opera House. So, like, we're still all around and we're still all friends. It was a sad time when we broke up because it was just before COVID. It was just the start of COVID.
Yeah.
And we just kind of realised it had lost its momentum a bit.
I mean, for the listeners out there, if you want to Google the Cahoots sketches, CAHOOTSCCC Cahoots, some very good sketches. I'm just trying to remember one of them. I remember one of them that came back to me there just a minute ago was it was a piss take of the Happy Pear twins. They were called the Sad Pair.
They were very
imagining the pears if they were sad and just stood around being unmotivated
and not doing
sea swimming in the morning or sun salutations. And they were just standing around and nothing was going on.
Oh, it was a great, do you know what? It was great.
Were you aware
crack.
Of those sketches?
Oh, they're sure. I watched them at home, and I was watching Laura's stuff so much. It was like I felt like you're one in Baby Rain there. I was looking back in it. No,
a little stalker.
Like, little stalker. She's brilliant.
It's weird.
But the Ann and Barry one was very funny.
Oh, Ann and Barry. It was good crack. Ann and Barry as adults. Me and Tom were Ann and Barry as adults, and kind of we were still going to the shop for jam and sandwiches and stuff. It was a great, like, we had a laugh. We had such a laugh.
I'd enjoy your humour. Like, her humour's fierce. Like, she. If I don't find somebody funny, I can't laugh off.
Yeah.
And she's a laugh. Like,
that was the crack we had in Cahoots. We used to crack each other up, and we so enjoyed it. And then I hate when anything ends. Like, I get so sad when something ends. So when Cahoots ended, it was just a natural end, really. COVID happened. I'd be so sad. I'd be like, oh my God, that's gone now. And then I have this, Rob will tell you, I have this feeling of, like, everyone always leaves me. She's always left on her own. Rob is going to leave me now. And all this. It's some sort of weird thing from when I was, it must have been from when I was small, and you'd have, like, groups of friends, and then they'd break up. It's like, oh God, she'll be back to being on her own now again. But when Cahoots ended, I genuinely did feel sad. But, like, we've managed to, like, we're all still friends and everything. We're not like steps. We're not going to need to do an awkward documentary to see if we can still get back together. But, like, yeah, I think for Tyke has gone off the direction he wanted. I've gone off the direction I wanted, and so did Dom. I don't know. Sometimes I think there's a one reunion show in us, but then maybe nobody would care.
And you are continuing with your stand-up.
I am, yeah.
And you write all your own stand-up.
I do.
And you're performing your shows.
I am.
And you do tours?
Not at the moment, because I'm doing Being a Mam as well, Mario. Yes. And it's so hard. Like,
you've just had your third?
I've had my third and last. There'll be no more. The snip has happened. There will be no more.
The snip has had for Sparkly, or you?
Sparkly. Sparkly has been snipped. Sparkly. I've done enough. I've done more
he's
than enough.
Spark's taken away.
He has. He's not Sparkly now anymore. Baby Freddy is nearly, he's nearly 9 months now. And do you know the way sometimes you can just feel a bit like, oh, you know, I'm not doing enough in comedy now. I need to get out and I need to be touring and I need to go up to Louth on a Wednesday night and do 10 minutes and all that. I've just had to take myself aside and say, would you calm down? You're a mom of three, like a 9-year-old, a 6-year-old and a 9-month-old. You can do it all, but also they are my priority at the moment.
Yeah.
So, like, you do have to calm yourself down every now and again, because in the arts, you do have that feeling of, like, because I must be shown how productive I am. And even there when you were like, you write all your own material. material. I was like, yes, I do. Yes, I do, Mario. And I'm constantly.
No, you caught my bait.
I'm writing now the
no,
whole
I
time.
I have bait out there. And you just grabbed it like a little fish.
I'm writing. I swear to God. But I'm like, I always say to Rob, anyone you meet that says they're writing, I think they're fucking lying most of the time. It's like, you're no more writing. You're sitting at home scratching your arse.
Yeah, I know.
Do you know? And like, it's just, I could feel very pressured to say something else to you. But at the moment, I'm doing the podcast, which I love, and then the rest of the time it is nappies and Suda Cream and Gawk.
Yeah. and the podcast, right? So is it directed at everybody, or is it leaning towards a Cork audience?
Oh, it's not leaning towards a Cork audience. I think people do try to put us into a Cork thing. The only Cork thing about it is the fact that we have two dirty Cork accents, but everything else, it's just universal. And I know that's annoying. It's like, who is it aimed at? It is aimed at everyone, because I do think you could get a bit out of it for no matter what age you are. And I do actually think, I suppose, we love Cork so much, it's very hard to jump out of it, but we must. There's loads of other parts of Ireland, and there's loads of other parts of the world, and like, we're talking about universal themes. Like, we're not talking about no shaky bridge every day. Like, it's not all like Fitzgerald's Park and Shandon. Do you know? We're talking about the world.
Oh, yes.
It's not all the shaky bridge.
Of course not.
No, but people are like, you know, you'd be introduced as like Cork podcast, and I'm like, why are you doing that? Are you diminishing?
Look, I was only asking.
Yeah, yeah. Are you diminishing
it,
Mario?
There's no need to take umbrage.
No, right, but you know
Deputy,
what I mean.
Deputy, there's no need to take umbrage. We're coming to the Oireachtas committee now.
Yeah,
right. I want that on my desk on Monday morning.
We'll take a load of umbrage.
Don't take any umbrage with me. Okay? I have no problem with Cork at all. So one of the things is, did you say that you were, when you had your third child, you were inundated with personal trainers sending you
loads? Yeah.
Tell me all about this.
Oh my word. They get onto you. This is a new kind of a thing. They get onto you on Instagram and they send you a private message. Now, the first insult is that they don't follow you. I'm like, if you're going to insult me, please follow me. Like,
don't abandon me before you could follow
please,
me.
Please, let me.
We wouldn't.
If they followed you, no way would they send you a message.
They'd be straight away blocked. So the message you get is basically like, hi, Laura, how are you? This is whoever here, Jason. And I've just been looking through your pictures. And, you know, I offer a kind of a 10-week program. This is what you'd have to do, nutrition program and like, you know, physical regime and blah, blah, blah. Would you be interested? And some of them go so far as to kind of say, you know, for moms that kind of want to, like, you know, get themselves back. And I'm like, excuse me. I said, what do you mean? They prey on the mom factor, you know, like basically you've made a mess of yourself now with the babies, girl. I've looked at the pictures and now I'm coming on here to just to under the guise of wanting to help you. So I've often like fired back going, well, no, I'm grand. I'm delighted to be a chubby dote. Please go away. And one fella got back going, oh, you're not as nice as you seem. I'm like, but you've just come into my DMs. Like, I'm about my business. You've come into my DMs basically to say you've looked at my pictures, you think I'm a mess, and you're going to help me.
They've bench pressed into your DMs.
Absolutely. But, and it's chaos. And they get so offended. Then when I'm like, no, I'm grand. I'm happy out how I am.
No, that is.
And I'm like, I do a podcast with an Olympian. If I need any help on my regime, I'll ask him. Do you know what I mean? But it's a new form of marketing. And you get upset.
Do you know what you should do, Laura? You should just let it lie, right? And then 2 weeks later, you just slide into their DMs and go, listen, I've just been having a look at your pictures and your remarks and your comments and I kind of run a mental health thing.
I know.
I think you might need a little bit of coaching. Now, I do a 10-week seminar for £1,000.
Yeah.
You're not as nice as you could be.
You're not as nice as you could be, particularly for dads that feel like they've really fucked themselves up. Like, it's just... And now, if you were sensitive at all, like, it's fine getting on to me, but I was like, what if they got on to someone that genuinely has some sort of eating disorder or something? You'd be feeling like a big fat dope driving the car. That's what I felt
That's new to me, Laura. They're not following you and they're sliding into your DMs.
Sliding in, yeah.
They're preying on the fact that you've had a baby.
Yeah.
And they're going, you've let yourself go now.
Yeah, look at the
and
mess.
You're like, let myself go. Yeah. I have 10 minutes to do in Louth tomorrow night.
Yeah. I'm not doing no squats with you, boy. No, but it's bizarre. And like,
it's back again as content, isn't it? They're platforming off your public status. And
yeah, and they want me to do some sort of transformation.
And I think that's the podcast as well. Like, that we're genuinely unfiltered chatting about our feelings with our experiences in life, and that it's not coming at an angle, and it doesn't necessarily mean that we're right.
And we have, just, like we have,
I could be completely off the. And we've chatted about stuff, and I say, "Fuck, I'm completely wrong."
But
that's
we
just
have
the way
war
I think.
Over body image stuff, yeah. Because like Rob would be talking to me about like, "Oh, I've put on a few pounds," and I'm like, "Have you seen yourself? Like, you're the size of my baby finger." Like, as in, and so we often get into like kind of stressful conversations about that stuff because.
But you've probably spent, Rob, you've probably spent your whole life being extremely body conscious for the.
Yeah.
Obvious.
And we've
reasons.
Covered that then as well, like that we're all coming from a place and an imagery of ourselves that we're happy with. And I sent Laura on a picture the other day, like when I was 39 and I was like a mini bodybuilder, like I was so cut. So when I see my boobs, yeah. The sag here, yeah. And I see this here, I definitely have a bit of body dysmorphia, yeah.
Even though,
from what I was.
Even though relatively speaking, of course, you're
yeah.
Very slim.
Yeah, yeah. And we've done this the other day, like, and I made... kind of analogy to a girl who's putting up videos about weight that she had the perfect body, and I'm still trying to get the words what the perfect body in the sense like that she would have having a body like a Page 3 model,
yeah,
and now she's a tiny bit of weight in her, and I'm like, is she for fucking real, you know? Why can't 40-year-olds put up pictures now that they're making us feel normal? Like, that's normal to have a bit of fat in you, like.
And we've also discussed then, like, when Rob is saying that about your one with the perfect body, then I'm here going, what do you mean, perfect body? There's no such thing. What are you talking about?
Yeah, and also, I'm like, going, no, you tell me what I mean. You know I'm not meaning this in a derogatory way
like,
to you.
And also this notion of, like for if Rob has some sort of issue with his body, then it makes me think, oh, gee, because he must think he's one of the ones now thinking I'm a mess, needs to be fixed because I've had 3 sections and I'm not out pounding, you know, I'm not running and I'm still a chubby little dote. But it's we've had good chats about it. It's actually helped me to be more normal about it as well and calm down. Yeah. Like, this is not a man roaring at me to be skinny. He has no interest in that. He would like me to be healthy, which I am. Yeah. But, you know, that chip in your shoulder comes with you the whole time and then it gets exacerbated by these dopes getting onto you. Basically saying you're a mess.
Yeah.
I've looked at your photos.
Yeah.
I'm like...
And not following you. That's the gas.
Yeah, not... I mean, at least give me the follow. Come on, need
what
those
about,
numbers.
And is there a slight scepticism from both of you towards the wellness industry?
Oh, huge.
Was that fair to say?
Yeah.
Like, I think it's completely over-contented in the sense, like I would say to Laura, if she did ask me for advice about fitness, sure, just fucking go out the door. Leave your house. Go 15 minutes down the road, 15 minutes back, do a few wall squats with a Swiss ball and do some bicep curls with a tin of beans and you're grand. I says, because I've done so much stuff, I have to go out and run 10 or 12K every day just because my body's used to doing so much training. It's overcomplicated. Like I think with exercise and fitness, if you could just bring in that, and you go walking out with Freddie and the buggy every morning after the school run, it's just been...
But the wellness, like it's, the wellness
you're talking,
thing.
Rob is referring, I think, specifically there to, a little bit to mental, to physical wellness.
Yeah, oh, and the wellness
done,
industry.
And we covered that as well. Like we went down about even settling in my, was like going for, intrinsically, like before I raced, sure I could go off to the beach on my own. There was no agenda, but it was just to settle my mind and to think. But you could build a whole narrative around mindfulness and... What were we on about the other day? Like, being present and just fuck, it's over.
I'm always a bit edgy about, like, we don't think, like, we're not going to be people that are going to help you with your mental health. We might accidentally help you with it by listening to us, but like people that are making an industry out of it, they frighten us. There's people we know that are out there giving talks about this is how you get your life on track and this is what you need to do and blah blah blah, and I'm like, I don't know, should we be... I think we have to be very careful of who we take advice from. And I think there are vulnerable people online that start following these kind of wellness gurus, these self-proclaimed wellness gurus. And I think that there's damage being caused because you have to look at your own situation. And also, a lot of the ones peddling wellness... Like, some of them are genuine, but some of them are just coming up with nonsense, pulling it out of thin air and going, hey guys, I'm doing this amazing thing. And it's like, that's quite dangerous.
It is. It's
false
a funny
gods.
It's a funny one. And I think need to just drill down a bit more into it. That the idea that I think the two words wellness and industry don't go well together.
Correct.
Do you know what I mean? I think that's a hard thing for me to say. You know, wellness industry. It's like the religious industry.
Yeah.
Do you know? I mean, I find it hard to put the two words together and stay serious. And the other one is the idea that industry suggests constantly selling. And I don't know about constantly selling wellness, right?
Yeah.
And the other one is wellness is something that if you're being fed or if you're being given and fed all these feeds of wellness and everything, there's a danger that you may become stressed from the feed of the wellness.
100%. And the
because
wellness,
it just becomes another thing that yeah. you have to do.
I think the wellness industry is making... I think the wellness industry is making money out of you feeling bad about yourself. I do think there is a bit of that. Like, wellness people kind of can't thrive unless they're saying there's something wrong with you. Like the ones that are peddling their goods. Mm. Like, there's obviously genuine ones with really good intentions, but there is also people that are wanting you to feel bad and they have the cure and they're going to sell it to you and you're just going to still be the worse off.
Yeah. There's also something about it as well, which I'm not quite sure where I am with this on this front, but so many big tech firms have bought into it so much that I'm kind of skeptical about that, because it's like, hey, guys, stay after five and then we'll get you the nice wellness class.
It's ticking the box and looking after the staff then as well, isn't it?
Yeah, but it's also kind of maybe making, you know, kind of putting them in a responsibility for your wellness.
Mm.
Whereas maybe the two should be separated. Do you understand?
Yeah.
In other words, when the company starts going, so we pay you, we give you a job, and hey, we look after your wellness as well. And I kind of go, is that really your place?
Yeah.
It just raises another, for me, it's like quandary.
My wellness is my own business. I wouldn't say
and
it's
not
my,
your business.
Yeah, exactly. Mm. And how I deal with it is my own business. But I think people are guilty of giving things a capital letter all the time now as well. Like what Rob is saying about like just walking out the door and going for a walk.
Yeah.
There's people come back then and they call it grounding with a capital G.
Yeah.
Or they call it self-care with a capital S. Or they call it mindfulness with a capital M.
Yeah.
And it's like, you went for a walk. Yeah. You got fresh air. Yeah. Like, stop overcomplicating it, because it is that thing of, you know, like, did you attend to your self-care today? I don't know.
Yes.
I went to the toilet and I washed my hands afterwards. That's self-care. Yeah. Like, why does it have to be this, like, my self-care tip?
I was turding.
Yet.
I was turding
capital
myself.
T.
It's a capital T.
Yeah.
I was deturding.
I've unburdened my turding. Yeah.
I've unburdened.
It's ridiculous.
I was bowel unburdling.
Yeah.
Burning.
Big time.
Yeah.
There's obviously people who have learnt about it, but then there's also people that are pulling it out of their arse. Like, I could go onto Instagram and be like, hey guys, we had a really great trip to Dublin today now, and on the way up in the car, we let the air in and kind of circulate and, you know, really got that breathing going. I'm talking out my hole. And there are people that are. And I just think there's vulnerable people that are not aware that you're giving yourself these false wellness gods.
I'm even going to go even harder with you, right? I'm even going to go, anybody that starts with, hey guys, I've gone already.
You've lost me, yeah.
That's why when you see the follow-through rate on your Instagram saying, he left me after 0.4 of a second.
So, hey guys, gone.
You know, just go, you should start with bowel unburdening.
Yeah.
You'll keep me there. So I go, I'm interested.
Hey guys.
Turding.
Yeah.
What
yeah,
is it?
Now I'm here, yeah.
And then you can say, hey guys. But the guys, hey guys, it's almost going, hi, I'm one of you.
Yeah.
Just want to slip you a quick message here that has nothing to do with making me money.
Nothing at all. Yeah. But hey, look at this new sponge that you need for your self-care. Ridiculous.
Yeah. Have you ever thought that you're dirty?
Yeah.
You're inside and out. Dirty.
Yeah.
Well, guys, I'm here. You know? It is that. It's
it
the
is.
Truman Show.
It is.
It's not as obvious,
yeah.
but basically they are holding up the thing. Now, your son, right? Is your son playing for Newcastle? Or
Newcastle, yeah.
How is he?
He's great.
What age is he now?
He was 19 the other week.
And is he? He's playing? He's given a contract by Newcastle.
Yeah. So he was in AC Milan for a year and a half.
Yeah, I remember that.
And he went from Milan to Newcastle, and he was meant to fly to Australia.
Is he centre back?
Centre back on Sunday, and a door closed on the back of his Achilles and cut all the Achilles, and he's back in Cork now. He came home last night.
What do you mean he cut all the Achilles?
A door closed on the back of his Achilles and cut all the skin. So he had to go to the...
Oh, but it's not ruptured.
Achilles is fine. Mm. But he was meant to go to Australia with the first team. And he was going to make his debut over there.
On the summer?
No, today. They play today.
Oh, no.
They're playing Spurs. Yeah, so they went directly after the last game of the season.
Yeah, but this is only a short-term injury.
He's fine.
Yeah. And listen, is he promising?
Yeah,
of
but he's a good...
Promising.
Yeah. But he was like, look, this is devastating now, but if you're looking in the big picture and if you want to go where you think you're going to go, this is going to be a distant memory. But right now it is massive, you know, because it'd be private jet to Australia, all the first team players, even the experience of being there and how to conduct yourself and, you know, still keeping your head in the game. And And just like that. Should have sport.
How's his mentality for football? For
he's brilliant. Like, we were just chatting to him there before we came in here, and he's a great young fella, isn't he, Laurie? He's really good. And I just think he's lived the life, and I think he's an appreciation for the environment that he's in, because being an athlete, being away with me and Marion, it was so tough. We had to do
so
everything.
Instructive for him.
Yeah. Mm. But no, for him, I think the football world's easy for him.
Yeah. Are a lot of lads his age, and maybe girls as well, are a lot of them quite sensible or not? Or do you think it's the same as when we were growing up?
It's definitely not the same as when we were growing up. I think there was a lot more characters when we were younger. I think they are probably a lot more sensible.
My son is 16. He's going to be turning 17. And I mean, he would laugh in my face if I suggested, if I asked him about smoking.
Okay.
And he'd go, what kind of a knob would smoke?
Yeah. Okay.
Right? And I went, just asking, do I take no umbrage?
Yeah.
Right? And then I'd go vaping, and he went, now you're getting really stupid.
Okay.
Yeah.
Right? Vaping. You fool. What fool vapes? So he would regard, and a lot of his friends would regard anybody that vapes as fools and smoking and all this. And I went, drugs? No. Although they would be interested in the concept of weed in even the future and everything. Because that's based on the idea that it's not necessarily bad for you.
Yeah.
Alcohol? Fairly in moderation, I think.
So, yeah, it's not as heavy as when we were younger.
Yeah. I mean, we used to have, I mean, you'd probably be similar, not similar vintage to me, but from the same generational values, where when we were 14, it was like, get 2 litres of Linden Village and go into a park and just throw yourself into a bush.
Bushing, isn't it?
It's bushing.
Yeah.
Unburdening.
Go on, Laura Gordon.
I never bushed in my life, but I've
heard unburdening your bush.
giving your bush a bit of self-care.
Yeah, unburdening your bush with a bottle. And so we used to do that, and we'd just get hammered.
But that gives me great, like, I don't want them to be too serious, but as a mom of like a 9, 6 and a baby, like in my head, the minute they hit 13, it's all drugs and women. Like, that's the panic in my head. I'm like, oh my God.
And the other thing is, I've often seen them being a bit more tactile with each other.
Right, okay.
Particularly the young men, boys 15, 14, that they're able to put their arms around each other, and they're a bit more tactile than we would have been when we were our age.
It
gives me a lot of hope.
Yeah, yeah. I was saying that to Laura, like, Kyle was home a couple of weeks ago, and I'm sitting at home watching The Green Mile with Marion, and he rang me. He was out with his friends, and he said, Dad, we're down in the local bar. And he says, come on out with us. And I was fucking delighted, do you know?
Did he?
Yeah, so he went out, and I was at home, jumped in the car. I was on to Laura, and got dressed, and Mara goes, go on away. Sure, we fucking ended up then, like, until 4 in the morning. But the lads were more chatting.
Yeah.
Lovely guys.
I love it.
Brought in the neighbour with the guitar. He was singing songs. Stevie Moore, what a legend.
Isn't that nice?
And it was a lovely night. And, you know, it wasn't the next morning, like, when we were younger, oh, what did I say, or the awkwardness. It was like, that last night was great, wasn't it?
Oh.
And that's nice.
Isn't that nice?
Whereas my two smallies just think I'm that cringy dad now, so I still have that kind of...
Yeah.
I'm cool with Cahill's friends.
You are.
But I'm young, like.
Yeah. But
you're very cool.
But it was nice. It's nice.
Yeah. Well,
I was asking, like, were the friends asking him to come down, like, for the crack, or were they asking him to come down to be like, bring your dad down and like
show him off?
What was it? But I do
tell him to bring the gold medal.
Yeah, I do think they think you're cool and that they want to hang out.
Ah, but he's good friends. But they're lovely lads, and they're all.
Yeah, I don't know. I get a lot of good vibes from these.
No, you're right. And I used to, even when his kids were, the boys were around when they were younger, he was like, oh, Dad, all of the boys love you. I think if you treat them like adults, realising that they will be adults in 3 or 4 years, they remember that.
Yeah.
Don't treat them like 14-year-olds who are dopes.
You know?
Every time I have somebody...
Not that they are dopes, like, but...
Every time I have people from Cork on, I religiously ask this question because I went to school in Cork for a while.
Where?
In Ashton.
Did you?
Yeah, and for 3 years.
During
my very, very, very important adolescent period, which happened to me bang on time.
Noises
there all in the old Black Rock Road.
Puberty off.
Yeah. And I loved it, and it was a very important time in my life, and it was very formative because I discovered my love of acting.
Okay. And Ashton is kind of like arty, isn't it?
It's a bit arty, isn't it?
And I did lots of plays there.
Yeah.
And that's where I wanted to become an actor and all that sort of stuff. And I was in kind of the boarding part of the school and sneaking out to Lennox's for chips and
ideal.
All that at night and all that sort of stuff. But Cork for me then, and that made it that when I do all my comedy and stuff, that I love going to Cork, mm-hmm. and that I seem to, you know, sell a lot of tickets there, mm. and also because I loved all the Cork characters, and I guess I fell in love with the kind of the Cork piss take, mm-hmm. and it reminded me that it is kind of totally very closely related to what I do, which is taking the piss out of people.
Yeah,
Seems to be very, very. Very Cork thing.
Yeah.
Like I remember, you may remember in 2010 or so, where that famous thing happened to Neil Prenderville. And I came down a week.
You're not really.
I came down a few weeks after that thing happened to him.
Yeah.
And first thing he'd get a taxi and says, "So you're going to talk about your man?" and I went, "Well, I don't know. Like, I don't know. What would it be like? How would it go down well here?" Taxi man gives me 5 minutes. Quality. Right? Next taxi, right? 2 hours later. Same thing with the taxi man. I go, here we go, the same 5 minutes. Totally different 5 minutes.
Really?
Utter quality.
Okay.
Prenderville.
Okay.
Absolutely, they have them razors out.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah.
Sharpened.
Yeah.
Filleted.
Yeah.
They're just gutting the fish.
Yeah.
Mm. Absolutely beautiful stuff. So what I was asking you was, what is so, like, and you can speak freely about this, what is so special about Cork? What is it? Can you try and put your finger on it?
For me, after all of the travelling, I love coming back home, like, and the characters that you can meet. There's a massive sense of crack. I remember after I won Worlds, I was meeting Roy Keane for a coffee, and I was waiting for him in the Riverlea Hotel in the lobby. Delighted to meet Roy, huge hero of mine. And then Tomás Mulcahy was at the counter, Cork. Captain of the hurling team that won the double in 1990. And then there was Dr. Khan was over in the corner, a legend in Cork, who I'm really good friends with now. And I was fucking just going, this is unreal. Tomás Mulcahy, he was on my bedroom wall. I was telling him this, like, oh, you had a poster of you on my wall, like David Hasselhoff. Roy Keane, Dr. Khan. And the chats. And I just think we love our successful people then at home. And there's a bit of a safe place then when you're that they're fucking just having a laugh, you know, and just having the chats there. And I've had it down the Atlantic pond. I'd see it out when I'm running every day down the line. Just some people are very funny, like, you know,
they are very funny.
And they're very quick with it. And yeah. I was down the line the other week with the lads, and there was two women passing in their 50s. And I put my arms out. One of the boys were there running, and he goes, "Watch that fella now." He says, "He's very dangerous. He's just out of jail." And she's fucking just like that. He goes, "He'd want to watch us." But it's very Cork, you know. Yeah. But they were in their 50s, 60s, and I hope that's not dying in our culture down there, because there's fierce characters, like.
Yeah, do you agree, Laura?
Yeah, I think it's crack is, like, obviously there's crack all over Ireland, but geez, car crack, it's the glint in the eye. It's like when you meet somebody, like, obviously there's a lot of dopes as well, but when you meet somebody that you're like, there's crack in this person now, it's like the room could explode with the amount of crack you're going to have. And I do think that it's a good mad crack now. I can
you sound like you're trying to package the two Johnnies there for a second.
There's so much fucking crack here, my jaws are fucking falling off.
It's going to explode. But it's just, there's something about it. I always notice that when I come up to Dublin or anywhere doing gigs, in my head the whole way up in the car I'm like, don't be a gom now. The minute you start off the gig, say, don't say anything about Cork, you don't have to. And I'm on the way off my head, I'm like, you don't do it. You're a cosmopolitan woman who's coming up to do her badass stand up in Dublin, and no sooner do I get in front of the microphone than I go, I'm from Cork. I'm just like, for fuck's sake, what is wrong with me?
Yeah.
But there is a kind of a, it's almost like I feel everybody needs to know, do you know, like, as in, and it's just
I'm trying to figure it out, and
yeah.
There has to be a background to it, and I'm kind of thinking one of the things is the independence. Right?
Okay.
It's that singularity.
Yeah.
It's the fact that there is this, there's us, there's them, there's all you.
Yeah.
Because no other county does this. No other county does
this. We're like the Basque country in Ireland.
Yeah, a little bit. No other county does this. Dubs don't do it. Dublin people don't do it. The Dubs don't do it. Dubs just go, you're from the sticks.
Yeah.
Everybody else is from the sticks. We're the city. But every city does that.
Yeah.
Madrid does it. Paris does it.
Yeah.
And they're a little quicker and a little brusque and a little arrogant and a little, you know, a little bit ruder. Every city is like that.
Yeah.
But no other county does that. There's them, but then there's us.
Yeah.
So there's that insane pride.
Yeah.
In who they are.
With a small chip in the shoulder, which I think is the chip is the bit of magic.
Yeah.
Because, like, I've often been up here doing gigs. Up here, even saying that is a weird way to say it. But I've been up here in gigs and people are like, you came all the way up the road from Cork. And straight away, the back is up and the trip is out. And I'm like, well, it's only 2 hours away. Like, there's a great road now. There's no, you know, straight away, it's like, oh yeah, Dublin, you're coming here telling me I can't be up here. Yeah. There is a chip in the shoulder that drives, that bubbles under the surface. Yeah. And it does stem from a, because look at us, we're savage crack.
It's like as if there's this competing kingdom down there. And this kingdom, which is, it's the real capital thing.
It
that
is.
This kingdom feel, you know, this is the uncrowned prince.
Yeah.
You know, you can say
it's
all you want.
Factual then as well, Mario.
You can say all you want about Big C for capital. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah,
nobody's really listening.
Yeah.
This is where the prince in waiting is really always there.
Like, do other counties have the lock? They don't. Do you know what I mean?
But it's an intense pride.
Yeah.
The chip, I agree. And Keane used to always say that about coming up to Dublin, you know, to play in the under 15s.
Yeah.
They never picked me. They never picked me. I was going, why? You know, I was too small. We all started small in Cork. You know, my balls didn't drop till I was 18.
Yours dropped before his, right?
Yeah.
You know, I don't remember meeting you in the River Lee. I remember.
But I remember one night I was presenting awards at a medical thing in UCC where you were doctors getting awards, and I said, this is the only county in Ireland. I says, I was out training this morning along the straight road, and I says, there was boys down on the weir fishing with cans, and we're going, go on, Rob. You know, and then I'm not there with like the highest members in society getting awards, doctors, and it was the same. And it was just a universal feeling of being proud in all walks of life in Cork. And we have loads of examples as well. I remember when Spain beat Ireland 7-0 in the soccer, I was out in Spain training, and the Spanish guy who I was training with goes, normal, Rob, Irlanda is amateur. And I say, Paco, I says, I live in Cork. I says, we've Dennis Irwin, Roy Keane, Sonny O'Sullivan, Marcus O'Sullivan, Dervla O'Rourke. Let's not go on to Ronan O'Gara and the rugby players and then all of you. I says, we're different. I says, we're... And then he started explaining to the Spanish friend in Spanish, no, the mentality in Cork, muy diferente de personas, muy diferente in Cork.
There is a winning mentality, and the Rog is a very good example, you know, of that... that stubbornness and that kind of, it's a bit of an arrogance, a little bit of a chip, and it's just a bit off in a way, but it's, for me, it's so on. But for other people, it's so off. Yeah. I mean, Rog is strange. He's odd.
Well, I think most Cork people are like, seem normal, but you also are a bit wary of them because they're demented.
He's a bit demented.
Yeah, we're all demented.
It is a bit demented.
My dad always says it. He's like, make people think that you're demented.
Yeah.
And that's how people kind of...
It is, it's half demented. Yeah.
But
I mean, Rog is an example. I mean, everybody knows that Roy Keane
is
half demented.
Yeah.
But Rog is half demented. Yeah, anybody who goes on national television, they go, so Ronan O'Gara, can we have your opinion on the first half? Do you think Ireland worked the back line well? Do they work the back line well? You're going, is this guy a fucking Shanna Key from like old Ireland? Do you not realise you're on telly?
Yeah,
buttons are, the time is going. He just couldn't give a bollocks.
Yeah.
He's just there, the telly will wait for me.
Yeah, it's his demented, wayward soul. We all have it.
And it's gripping because everybody's used to filling time now. What do you think about that? I'll tell you what, I'll give you 20 minutes on that. I'll give you 40 minutes on this, and I'll give you 30 minutes and 10 minutes in loud after that. And I'll have a baby in between, and I'll run telling me a kilometre, and I'll deter myself as well. And you go, okay, that's enough content. But then this fella just goes, I don't know. God, this is brilliant.
Mesmerising.
Mesmerising for somebody to go, and it looks half as if he's on the spectrum.
Yeah.
But he's not.
It's just his wayward Cork soul.
That demented Cork thing. Anyway, I love it.
Yeah, we do too.
Sonia Sullivan has it as well. She does it as well. Sonia Sullivan.
Sonia, I'm not laughing
whenever I'm doing Sonia, I play her as a ventriloquist dummy. And I'm sitting on Sonia's knee and she's going on there. This is one of the first times I've done this. No, it's one of the first times I've done this impression. I actually don't often laugh.
I'm refusing to laugh. Sonia's my friend.
She does have a good sense of humour, I heard.
Yeah.
Come here. Can you tell me, have you ever appeared on Brendan's show?
I have.
Yeah?
I have.
Did you talk about mental health? Well, you are now. Why would you slag off mental health, Brendan? I mean, Liam, or no, Rob. What were you running away from? What were you walking away from? Don't walk away from me.
He's always looking at his sheets. Brendan owns his sheets on the go all the time.
Oh, yeah, no. COVID? Do you have COVID? I'm afraid of COVID. I'm scared of COVID. It's gone long ago, but I'm still... Did you see COVID? I thought I walked into him a minute ago. Let's talk about COVID.
Or John's plan.
Oh, we love John.
That's another element of that's another element of Cork. Because demented, but I meet you. The fella that has the hair of a 14-year-old, and he's actually 400 years of age, right? He's like Jesus Christ. He's like Michael Jackson in his early phase. He's like Michael Jackson in his ABC phase. It's all standing up there like this, right? And he said, "How are you, John? I'm brilliant. How do you think I am?" He's like a guy that's just been injected with one of those happy pills.
Oh, he's great.
John
though, isn't he?
John came to my house just before.
How's your new album? It's brilliant. Whoever says that?
I
double him and go, well, you know, I was kind of knocking it out there for years. And I was kind of, I don't know, man. We'll just put it out there, you know. He said, no, it's fucking brilliant.
John came to my house just shortly before I had my last baby. We were working on a project together, right? Now, in the end, I wasn't able to do it because I was literally about to have the baby. But he came into my kitchen with his guitar and a guitar and a laptop, I think, loads of bags anyway. And he just walked in and the guitar was whacking off the wall and off the cupboard. There was just no kind of spatial awareness. But it was just such a surreal moment. I was like, John's plans in my kitchen. And it was kind of like, I love him so much, but his guitar is bashing off my wall. What's happening? He's just like, there's a wildness when he comes into a room, which is just like amazing. And then he's suddenly like sitting at my table singing bits of a mad opera that he's after writing. And I'm like, I'm too pregnant to be putting up with this. But it was amazing. But he does have that wild, demented Cork soul.
We really love John.
Yeah, he's great crack.
Love John's
great crack.
And who else? The two other lads I had in my podcast, which this was interesting because they were talking a bit about wellness as well, but from their own personal perspective of, it was the two Norris, right?
Oh, yeah.
And the two Norris said, I was the first person that ever took the piss out of them.
Oh, yeah. Well,
really? Because, yeah,
it's
so
scary.
So, Mario, I was crawling around on the ground, right? And I'd see the bit of paint on the ground, and I tried to sniff it up there, thinking that it's cork there, and I tell you, Timmy, let me tell you, Timmy, And I started taking the piss out of them, and they started roaring laughing, because they went, you're the first person ever to take the piss out of us. Everybody thinks we are serious all the time.
Yeah.
And all this sort of stuff. So we've stayed in touch since.
Yeah.
But I went to their podcast in Cork. They came to see my show in the Opera House. We're firm friends. We've exchanged numbers
nice
and everything.
Fellas.
Because knew that, because basically what I was saying was, having heard their life story and the difficulties that they've had, everybody tiptoes so carefully around them going, oh, you're great lads.
Yeah.
Well done.
Yeah, you're a bit scary. But
stay away.
Yeah.
But you're great lads and you got over it now, didn't you?
Mm. Yeah.
And you're helping other people.
Yeah.
That's great now, so you're safe.
Yeah.
And I'm there sort of kind of going, you know, that's all a bit careful. What they want is, they want the piss taken out of them so that they're truly involved.
Mm. Yeah.
That they're not seeing as being othered.
Mm. Yeah. Mm. Well, to be fair though, they bring it on themselves because everything they post, they say it's powerful. It can't all be powerful. That's
Mario, this is powerful
this
words.
This is a powerful. We just did a powerful talk there. It can't all be powerful.
Listen, it was a powerful when me and Martin on there and he was powerful.
Powerful.
Then we had you, but I was even more powerful. So like
sometimes it's just a chat.
No, but like it's like I just we're all powerfuling each other. And sometimes we're afraid to get a guest on. We had Deepak Chopra on there last week and he was so powerful, right? We had to stop him.
What did I do?
No, because he was too powerful. So we couldn't put out the podcast because it was just, it overpowered the waves, like.
So true. It's so true. They're bait from being powerful.
They're bait from being powerful. But you know, they're amazing fellas.
Yeah.
And let's face it, what they have done is amazing.
Yeah.
And powerful in itself to ratchet themselves off that floor in prison.
Completely.
And to turn themselves into people who are actually doing the ultimate thing that a human should do, which is thinking of other people.
Yeah. Mm. And also, it just goes back to like...
making a few quid on it.
Yeah, absolutely. Powerful amount of money. But they're not like... It's other people... looking at them as well is making them into something that they're not. Like, we've often said we'd love to have them on because we know there's crack in them. There's definitely crack in them. There has to be crack in them. And it's like, but it's other people kind of then saying to us, oh, no,
crack
no, this
are you
is
talking
the way
about now? I know a few fellas like from before, right?
I know a couple of powerful fellas.
This crack was powerful. Yeah, we should have get loads of other Cork people together and
it would explode
the
room
that.
Would explode
with crack
it would.
Anyway, that's my fascination with Cork.
Good.
That's pretty much it. The podcast is called The Red Raw Podcast. And it's not a Cork podcast. It's for everybody podcast.
Universal.
And it features you two personalities together hitting off each other and bringing your own wealth of experience, life experience. And of course, I knew you before, Laura, a little bit. You appeared on Sunday Roast
Many times, yeah.
And I was a fan of Cahoots.
Yeah.
And Rob, great to meet you.
Lovely to meet you.
Thanks,
Mario. Thanks
very much. And mind yourselves, and a pleasure to have you on the podcast.
It was powerful.
Powerful. Thank you, lads.
And my thanks to Laura and Rob for a great chat. I particularly love all the reminiscences about Cork and what makes Cork great. And we really had good fun together in studio. You can get in contact with me, of course, mariorosenstock@gmail.com. Directly, I get back to nearly all of them and I read all of them. So take care. That's it for this week. See you same time, same place next week. Bye.